this is Deborah Anderson, the Black Woman Animator, coming back to you with another video. And in this video, I have Hamid Ibrahim. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So can you give a little introduction about yourself?
Cool. So as Deborah said, my name is Hamid Ibrahim. I'm one of the co-founders of a company called Kugali. Our goal at Kugali is to tell African stories in the best way. So we focus on visual storytelling. Originally, and it's a black animator, so you guys can understand the depth of it a bit better. Originally, I started off my career 3D modeling, then I went into rigging, and then I did a complete beeline. Right now, I'm in production design, i.e. art directing, which is, yeah, so I've had a very interesting career. So that's me in a nutshell.
Bless you for being a rigger.
I love it. Funny. It's one of those I love. There's always that animosity between the animators, and the riggers. It's always the animator's fault, and the animators are always saying it's always the rigger's fault. So it's always that.
Yeah, I took a class in college, and I did the legs, and then moved on to the arms, and the legs broke. So I was like, well, this isn't for me. I'm like, I didn't even touch the legs. What happened? But anyway. You're from Uganda and grew up in Kenya and Uganda. How was it growing up in two different countries?
It's very interesting. The first one is my accent. Nobody can really point out my accent. And when people try to point it out, they say Zimbabwe, which is very interesting because I've never even been to Zimbabwe, right? And because when I learned how to talk was in Kenya, because I was born in Uganda, then 1 year old to Kenya, right? Mm-hmm. So the accent came from there. And then you come to Uganda, now you're still learning how to talk, you're still learning yourself. So you kind of pick up those things as well. So it's been that interesting thing where that's one, which is the accent goes. And then two is in terms of relationships and people, mm-hmm. I'm very weird in that if I'm around you, we'll talk all the time. But the moment you're not around me, you could think I died. Like I just disappear. But I'm working on it. I'm getting much better. So that'll be the two things which would be very different is that. And also you get an understanding of the different cultures. Yeah. Very early on, right? You understand that different people are very different and you're a lot more lenient in terms of differences of people, right? So for example, I have friends from politics-wise, I have friends who are extreme right-wing and extreme left-wing. Mm-hmm. And they all do understand how I can like the other person. But to me, because I grew up in different areas, I can kind of see everybody's point of view. And I'm like, both of you are kind of wrong, both of you are kind of right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What are some of your best childhood memories?
Ooh. This is going to say a lot about me, but food memories, I don't know why. It's me and food are best friends. So there's one, there's a food one, that's a big one. And then childhood, what did I identify as childhood? What's the cutoff edge of childhood?
Whatever you define as childhood, so tell your food childhood first.
Oh, I'll go with the food one first. This is a day, it's going to sound very ridiculous, but I was a kid. It is what it is, right? You know chapatis, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm a big fan of chapatis, right? This day, they made unlimited chapatis for us because as many as we want. I ate so much chapatis. I was kept because you're given a small portion. You have to keep going back to the kitchen to collect another portion, and it's a bit of a walk. So I went back five times, I remember, and I was so young, but I'll never forget that day. That's one which is absolutely just really? That's what you remember from the childhood. There's that.
All you can eat. That's when you first fell in love with all you can eat.
literally. It says a lot about me. I love me and food are best friends, right? Mm-hmm. If I didn't have treadmills all over my, everywhere I go there's a treadmill, I would be so fat. I would be so huge. So me and food are best friends. So there's that. And then another one was, I was a bit older. This was my first year in UK, actually. First year in the UK. Mm-hmm. I went for an exhibition to see Leonardo da Vinci's collection because the Queen has a collection of da Vinci's art and stuff. Then an exhibition happened in Buckingham Palace. I went to see that. To this day, I still keep the little, the ticket. I have it. It's completely faded. It looks way older than it is because it lives in my wallet. It looks like it's 100 years old, but it's only 10 years old or something. So yeah, those would be two big memories.
What is your favorite culture or tradition from your culture? Custom or tradition? I don't know if I said custom.
Custom or tradition. I think the way we look, I don't know if you can call it a tradition. It's more of a custom. Mm-hmm. The way we look at life in general, mm-hmm. it's not very I think it's more human. I if because there are a lot of hardships, right? Like when you go through hardships, and when we looked at those hardships, you wouldn't think that. It's more like, oh, that's just life. And it was more very easygoing, would laugh about it, right? Like there's some stories just of recent, just on Friday, one of our colleagues who we were working with was going back to LA, so I giving her like a little good night, goodbye dinner, right? Went out. And I was telling them stories about me in boarding school in Africa, and they all look horrified. But to me, when I'm talking to my friends, it's more like an endearing thing. Like, we're like, oh, you've been through that. It's a different way of looking at life. Like, here, I think it's funny because with so little, like, you can be way happier. It just depends how your mind is. And I think it's more of a culture thing, I like to say. Like, in terms of everybody who I see is around our culture, we usually have that thing where there's a bit of humbleness about life, let me say. And I really like that.
That's nice. So what was your journey in art and animation during your childhood?
It was a really weird one. It's one of those where, because a lot happened, and it's that thing of like you can tell the story in so many ways to frame it in so many different ways. But I would say that in terms of the genesis of it, in terms of art itself, it was an advert, a water advert. I don't remember which advert. I tried to find it, I failed to find it. But what happened was, what popped up was saying this much more than this, and then the Mona Lisa popped up. It was a Mona Lisa, much more than just art. And something about the image caught me. So that's kind of like the genesis. And then I researched Leonardo da Vinci. Again, remember I told you about the Da Vinci exhibition, just because he's like the person who got me into art, right? So I researched into him and I was like, how can a human being be this amazing? It didn't really make sense to me. Exactly. So I kind of fell in love with that. That was like my footstep into art. And then childhood wise, and then animation wise was different. Animation was Lion King. That's because I told you I grew up in Kenya, so Naongea Swahili, I speak Swahili. And that popped up, and that's the first time I had anybody speak Swahili, like in anything big. And I was like, oh wow, and it's an amazing movie as well. Funny enough, it's a funny story. I don't really tell people this. The first time I watched Lion King, I was so young, I couldn't process if it was a good movie or not. When I had brains, as I said, I was so scared to watch the movie again because I was scared it would be a crappy movie. Thank God I watched it and it was really good. I was like, oh, thank God. So yeah, so those will be the two genesis points. And then after that time I did like little tiny storybook. That was the first way I ever made money. Like, you get a paper, you cut it into small pieces, and then you staple the middle. And then I'll write like how the hyena did da. I'd write those stories, and I'd sell them. Those like the first way I would make money ever. Those my first. So it's
I
been
didn't
some really
know.
interesting points. Exactly. I always had that inside me. It's one of the things I think most. I'm like, I definitely had that inside me. Yeah.
Yeah, like I had like a experience with watching a movie another time, like when I first watched Black Panther. So I was the president of my National Urban League Young Professionals chapter. So we did like a big thing where we had I like rented out a theater, a black-owned theater in New Orleans, and we had people dress up in like either cosplay or just like African prince or just dress up like nice, like if you want to wear like a tux or something like that, because we were like, we're just gonna make this a big event and we're all gonna be looking great. And so as the president, I had to like take care of like taking people's tickets, making sure they had their like tickets for like popcorn and stuff like that. And then so when I finally sat down in my seat, it was maybe 10 minutes into the movie, and then I'm like just seeing how people like I'm not like doing anything, but I'm sitting in my seat like trying to see like the people like the event and all this stuff. And so that was like my first experience watching Black Panther. And then the second time I watched Black Panther, I liked it a little less, and I was like, well, I'm not watching it a third time. So I don't want to like it anymore less than I'm like, oh man, like what? Now that I'm paying attention,
Bubble.
like it's like a little bit worse for me, and I'm like, okay, I'll stop there.
I get you. I get you. I get you. I know it's scary, isn't it? You're like, nah, you don't
I'm
want to
like, this
ruin
is
the
a
laugh for
monumental movie, and I need to like just keep it there.
it.
And then with like the Leonardo da Vinci thing, I feel like when you don't have like technology and social media, you can do a lot of things. I think back in the day, if I didn't have like all these distractions, I would be like sitting and like thinking. I already think, like all the people on my like Facebook know, I already be thinking and stuff like that. But I like for like Socrates and Plato, they just sat and thought. So that's like powerful. So for Leonardo da Vinci, I feel like he had plenty of time to do all these things.
True, very true. I think we have an advantage over them, though, if you think about social media as well. So I have different social medias, right? I have multiple accounts. And that's because the algorithm, I'm not gonna lie, it's really good. The problem is it tackles what you go to most. So I have different accounts. So I have an account which is just for beautiful art.
Yeah, me
And
too.
the amount of art you're exposed to, I'm exposed, at least me personally. I don't know if anybody else does this, right? But if you don't do it, big pro tip, right? Because you cannot create out of nothing. You have to create out of something. There has to be something that inspires you or something. Even if you don't think it was that thing that inspires you, it goes in your subconscious somehow and it opens up a new door for you, right? Because an adjacent possible opens another possibility in terms of your thinking. And all those variations of art, I imagine if somebody like Da Vinci has, because if you think about his range, right? Again, he's not as destructive as us, so definitely. But by like 29, this guy had done all these paintings. He had created war machines for generals, right? He'd invented like a parachute. And you're thinking, they had no electricity as well, right? So for anatomy, he had to go dig out graves and stuff. It's something I'm thinking, if they had the tools we have today, I think it's more of a balance, right? We have the tools, but we have a lot of distractions. They don't have the tools, but they had like zero this. Like you'd be bored. Like what are you doing? Standing at the stars the whole night, kind of things. Like, I'm curious. I wish I could go back in time and be like, hey, that's Instagram to Da Vinci and see what comes out.
Yeah, but also like, 'cause you know, people who maybe learned animation 50 years ago had much more, like they had less resources, but you could be more directed. Like right now we have so many resources, and if you have like, if you think about YouTube, you don't know, when you're learning, you don't know what is quality resource.
Yes.
So it's like,
Yeah.
six in one hand, a half a dozen in another. Like, so I think it's just a, you just got to deal with what time you grew up in.
It's interesting though. Somebody should make that as like a little short skit. Like they put all these greats in today's world and see what would come out. That'll be very interesting. Yeah.
So, were your parents supportive of your artistic interests?
Yes, ish. So I'm in my mom's house right now, so she definitely can hear me. So when I first mentioned, because I was one of those kids who was like the smart kid, right? Everyone was like, oh, so I'd be a doctor or that was the thing, right? When I moved from Uganda. And then I moved here, and then I think I saw a desk, it had animation game design course on it. And I was like, but at first in my head, I was thinking I'm either gonna be a physicist or an architect. I saw this, I was like, that's both of those combined. I don't have to worry about actual gravity. I can just care about the things I care about. Like to build a real house, you have to worry about a lot of things, plumbing, da da da. To build a CG house, you just have to worry about the awesomeness of it. Right? So that was the thing that really pulled me to it. So told my mom this. She was supportive by words, but I could tell that she was worried. Right? Like you could tell the worries, yeah, but she was very supportive. But she definitely was like her face, she couldn't hide. She was definitely worried. So yes, but I saw that worry, I was like, oh, I cannot mess this up. It helped though. It made it feel more serious to me versus if you're like, oh, I want to do this, and they automatically, oh, yeah, go ahead, do it. Just go with it. Versus here, I was like, yeah, this is a big risk. It did feel like a risk I'm taking. So I was like, I'm going to put in the work that I need to put in to make this risk make sense. Yeah.
So how does she feel about your opportunities in the past few years?
Oh, she's over the moon. Funny, for the weirdest thing, it's like, there's some things which I think are a big deal, they're not a big deal to her. And some things I'm like, it's not a big deal, but to her, she's like, oh my God. So I'll give you an example, right? So when I was working on the film, because the first film I worked on ever was, I think it was Predator. The Predator was the first one. That's the first ever thing I touched. No, actually, before that, there was a League of Legends animation, and I was working at, it's called Electric Theater, right? So I was working on one of those. So she has no idea what League of Legends is. I was like, yo, it's big, millions of people are gonna see that. She was like, okay. It was like, right? And then the first time I saw her really excited was, I think, you get your name in the credit, even the trailers and so on. She saw that. She saw that. She was like, oh, this is cool. Well done. She was like, those are Hamid things. That's what Hamid does, right? And then first time she saw my name in the credit of a movie, so I took her to see that. You could tell she was really excited about that. But the one that really made me laugh was, so for example, me graduating, that was huge. Right, she was way much better than me. Like, I don't care. I even don't know where my graduation papers are. I really do not. I've never touched them. I don't know what they. I even don't know what they look like anymore. Right, there was something she was really excited about. I didn't care about. I think she was really excited about was, you know, we did that deal with Disney. When we did the deal, it was okay, but the announcement when they actually mentioned our names, when Jen Lee, right, the chief executive of Disney, mentioned our names, she was so excited. In mind, I was like, I pretty much told you this by words. I came all excited. She was like, "Yeah, that's good, well done." And then I showed the video. I was like, "Oh my God!" Everybody was like, "Huh?" So it's like different things. But
Private comedy show.
exactly. We have different understandings of different things. So.
Right. So, some projects. So this is the portion where I kind of like go through like projects that you've worked on so that people can know, you know, a person, a black person worked on this. So,
Awesome.
you worked on The Darkest Minds, Predator, Dumbo, Lion King, Doolittle, and now Uwaju. Have you worked on
Yes.
anything else?
In terms of movie related, no, like as in movie world, that would be the only ones. In terms of just gender related, Kogali have done quite a few things. We're very big in augmented reality right now. We are an official Snapchat creator, so that's one thing I really like. That's one thing I was really proud about that. That's a whole, that's many things under that umbrella of Snapchat creator. Let's say that I don't want to go down the rabbit hole. And then we work with a few projects with a few organizations. We just did a campaign just over recently, that's the last one we did, with United Combat Against Tropical Diseases. Very long name, it's an acronym. I can't remember what the acronym exactly is. But we did the whole campaign. We did two animations for them. We did like an AR filter for them and all that. So we did a whole thing for them. So quite a few things. But in terms of notable ones, I'd say movie-wise, those. And then I'll put the AR. We have a bunch of comic books. I haven't done a personal comic book yet. I was planning to do one this year, but my calendar is like, nah, bro, chill. but it's still a goal. Yeah. But I haven't done a personal comic yet myself. I may do one. But we've done quite a few things. But those were the biggest. Those are the big ones. Like, in the light of those things, everything else is like, tiny.
So feel free to go down the Snapchat rabbit hole because I feel like you're very unique, at least for the people I've interviewed, in that regard. So feel free to go into Snapchat subsets of what you do.
Okay. The subject one, it's this crazy thing of the range of people the people you impact, the people you reach to is so great. So I use the example of the last campaign we did, right? So with the AI, we did an augmented reality filter for them where there's a face just stands up. It was a character we created to be like their icon for the whole campaign. And we did that character's face, and you just, when you're in Snapchat, you turn on the camera, you talk, and the card just mimics your face, and it's just, you have a different head pretty much. We replace your head with a different head. Now, that one reached in about a week, it got to 45 million people used it. Right? That's a huge range. And then in that, in terms of people who clicked and went to the website, because we wanted to target a lot of young people to join them in the campaign, and we got about 500,000 people going to the website from that. Right?
Nice.
And that was like a huge win. And it's one of the things that you think about the numbers, it kind of boggles you in terms of that. But then you think about it, it's just more, it's an experience that somebody definitely spent less than a minute on. Some people even less than 20 seconds on, right? But for that, like, how do you quantify that? So that's one thing, the Snapchat ones, right? Because we have a lot of different subset experiences. I've been like, I'm just going all over the place. I think in total right now, in terms of, I think I'm pretty sure we have over 100 million people have used our filters combined. Probably, yeah, like it's a crazy number. You think about it. But then it's like nobody knows. Almost. It's crazy, right? That's the Snapchat filter. It's a crazy one. That's crazy about it. So it's that, in terms of the depth of it, is just, we know we're one of the top creators because I think we've informally mentioned, right? And also just in terms of opportunities reaching out, in terms of how unique we stand out in the area as well, right? Because they're very strict in that of almost every move we do, it has to promote something to do with Africa in a way. Like, always make sure, even if it's just something like we're doing on the side, it has to involve that, you know, that's our end goal. So we have the unique perspective, and also the fact that we have people, most of our employees who worked on all the Snapchat folders are based in Africa, right? Which is a big thing if you think about it. Like, most of them don't ever get that opportunity. And then sometimes they work on something and somebody else using their work and they're like, oh my God, my friend was using it. It's like crazy. So that's the angle of the Snapchat one. There's more, it's huge numbers, but to quantify it is a bit weird. Like, how do you, like, you know what I mean? Like, how do you quantify that in terms of importance?
Yeah.
Right? Versus if you're to get, let's say, you do a YouTube video and it gets 500,000 views.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's very different.
Yeah.
But this is like 45 million.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It doesn't seem to be as impactful. It's one of those. Something
the
one
people
is a
who pay
weird
you the money
hole.
Probably care.
Oh, they definitely care. They care. They always come back. They always come back. Right? They always do.
So that's
people
the
pay the money, always
part
come
of
back
it.
And come back. For sure, 100%.
Money.
Of course, of course. Kind of forget about the bug.
But I'm sure the people using the filter, it's important to them.
They do
them
enjoy it as well, yeah.
So what would you say is the biggest breakthrough in your career, or have you had multiple breakthroughs?
Been multiple, because I'm on, it's very rare you find somebody who achieved their wildest dreams.
Yes.
Now imagine you find someone who achieved their wildest dreams in their first year in working in the industry. Because my wildest, like to me, working on a big film, that was a wild dream, right? Remember I grew up in Kenya, Uganda, right? It was in, like before I came to this country, this is really weird to say, but I didn't even think people made the movies. I don't know how the movies came to life, but it just didn't occur to me that people made it. So my dream was like, you know what, I'll just work on one big one. And then I get to work on the remake of the film that inspired me to start working on film. Like, that was a really crazy one. Like, that was a day, like, I was like, if I die tomorrow, I'm good. But nobody tells you how you're going to feel after that. After the high, there's always a low.
Yeah.
So it's like, pew! Then the low is like, everybody, the world is, like, I don't know what I expected, but I don't know, maybe I expect fireworks every day from there or something. I don't know, right? But the world goes back to normal.
Right.
It's just like, it's just normal. But it's crazy. So that was one huge breakthrough. That was the first one in terms of career-wise. I'd say the one, it's not direct. It's one of the things where the foundation is built when people, nobody sees it. And then people see the results after, right? So I know foundation-wise, there's a day, not a day, it's a period of time. This was in uni. Because I had to work when I was in uni in order to like, and make ends meet when I'm doing that well money-wise, right?
Yeah.
So I worked a bit in security. I worked a bit in care. At that time, I was working in care. And the job was in London. Obviously, I'm a student. I'm broke. That's where I'm going. That's where I'm working. I'm not going to take a train, because I went to University of Hertfordshire. I'm not going to take a train from Hertfordshire to London. It's too expensive. I remember it was like 20-something pounds. I'm not paying that for a day. So I would go by bus, which was like £4.50. But by bus, going took 2.5 hours, coming back 2.5 hours. And that's when I learned how to code, was on the bus, on my phone. And that has paid dividends so much in my career all the way down later on.
Yeah.
And that's one of those foundation pieces where nobody really saw that. But it contributed a lot to all the things you see after. So that was one big one. Another big one was just how the first 2017, how hard I worked that year, I can't even fathom it anymore. I feel I'm old now. I definitely cannot keep up to that speed of work anymore. But I couldn't fathom it. So those two would be like in terms of breakthroughs for me personally. Those two periods of time, I would set up everything else. And then everything else was just like picking up, like you just pick up the fruit from the seeds you had planted.
Yeah. So what school did you go to for to learn, and how did you find it, and how did you get into the school and stuff?
Cool. The first one was West Ham's College. That's college when I first came here. Because I moved in the country. I only got 2 weeks notice before moving from Uganda. Pretty much your whole life is going to change. You get 2 weeks notice, right? That's because the visa was a child visa. And if I turned 18 before I traveled, the visa is void. So I had to travel, like, just get him on a plane as soon as possible. So I had 2 weeks to tell everybody goodbye. I didn't tell most people goodbye. Because I only told a few people, and obviously the news spread. And by the time I left, it was just like, how many of you going away? You're not coming back, da, 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 da. And then just like, now your whole life is different.
Yeah.
So that was in that short period of time. And then I arrived here. Obviously, I don't have a degree. I don't have like the high school. I don't have that. I don't have my form six because sorry, my form four, I didn't do it. I left right before I did it. So I went to college from there, and then I saw the course. So the first one in West Ham's College was called Animation and 3D Modeling. That was what the course was called in West Ham's College. That's in Hounslow, if anybody in UK knows that. It's a bit of a, not the best place to be as well as a place. The college, the course was good. The teacher specifically, he was really good. I liked him. He allowed me to explore and have range, and that I really value that. And then after that, I went to University of Hertfordshire. That's why I did my university there. I did 3D modeling. Was it 3D modeling and animation? So that's what I did as a course there. Yeah, that's education-wise. That's a path roughly.
How did you find out about the school?
West Ham's College. I think I'm not even the one who found it. I think my mom is the one who found it. I didn't know anything about the UK. I was getting lost on the buses, right? It was so crazy because right now I'm like, how stupid was I? Because the buses, they got the same route, right? But because I'm from Uganda, we don't go the same route. It's like the things take shortcuts and stuff sometimes. So in my head, I was like, okay, my mom was like, okay, you missed a stop going this way. Just get the exact same bus on the other side. It will bring you back where you're supposed to be. And I couldn't believe her. I was like, nah, what do you mean? What if they're going somewhere else? It
That's
was
funny.
that. So I didn't know anything. So she's on probably picked at West Ham's. And then University of Hertfordshire, I was researching the best universities for animation in the world. And then it was in UK, the ones in UK was Hertfordshire or Bournemouth. Yeah, Bournemouth. Yeah, Bournemouth. Yeah, it was one of those two, Hertfordshire or Bournemouth. I applied to both of them, but I picked Hertfordshire because their portfolio looked better. And generally, they had like really good like reputation in terms of animation and in the field and everything. So
Yeah.
that's how I found out about them. Yeah. But before that, it's just the course itself, animation course, that was a complete accident on the table I told you about. I found that course on the table. I was like, I'm going to go that way. I was looking for architecture or something. I was like, I'm going that way. So that's what
Yeah.
happened.
And then when you were talking about the high highs, I feel like particularly when you, 'cause for me, I watched animation and all that stuff, but I didn't like it didn't click as a like a career until I found it my senior year of high school. And so I feel like the people who have had that long journey of like wanting to be in animation, it's like when there's these TV shows that everybody likes and they hype up, and then when if you're late to the show, like I don't do this, but other people are like they're late to the hyped up show and they're like, it was okay. And it's like, but you weren't there when we were hyped though. Like, and so I feel like that's like when you've like spent your whole life wanting to be in animation, and then you get there and you were like, it's a job. Like, or it's a 9 to 5, and like there's none of these fireworks. Like obviously the animation industry, some studios, it is like better than working at a regular place, but it's just like, wow, I just gotta work and I can't be like inspired. Like I just gotta do my job like every day.
I feel that's a weird thing. My experience, because I came from Uganda, right? My idea of a job was very different. First of all, I'll tell you, the school, this is really funny, because I went boarding school back home, and we would get woken up to go to class at 4:30, and we had to be in class at 6 in the morning for morning preps, but teachers would take up the morning preps time to teach lessons. So technically, you're in class at 6 in the morning, 6 in the morning, 6:30, right? And then at night, there was night preps that would end at 9 p.m. Right, so technically, a teacher would check up that class as well. So technically, I'm in class from like 6 to 9. Obviously, the gaps in between, there's a big gap. The evening gap is the biggest gap. I come to this country, and they're like, hey, your class starts really early. They're like, it starts at 9 in the morning. I don't believe them. Like, what do you mean it starts at 9 in the morning? Do you mean that's break is at 9 in the morning after the earliest class? Like, I couldn't fathom it. And I remember when it clicked, my first thought was, I am gonna run circles around these people. That was the first thought, because that was my perspective of that, right? Even job-wise, my perspective of a job, I worked security and care. Not very glamorous, not many benefits. And then I went, the first video I worked in was Electric Theatre, and they had fruits and coffee for free. And to me, everybody else is like, what do you mean? That's just, but to me, it was a big thing. So my experience is very, I don't think you can put me like, I'm not a good judge for other
You're
people
right.
because of where I came from. To me, all these things are so amazing. To other people, they're like, what do you mean? That's just how it's supposed to be. I'm like, nah,
Right.
it's very different. But yeah, it was just, to me, it always felt glamorous. And to other people are like, no, it's not that. But to me, it always just felt glamorous to me.
Yeah, like when I lived in South Korea for 2 years, the first year I taught English, so I got to like see how, you know, they would go to school and then go to like their academies and like just be like the same pretty much schedule of like education. And then like I taught like middle school and high school, so like I did a camp for elementary school, and I just look at those elementary school kids like your life is about to end, because like Korea gets really serious in middle school and high school. And so like it's so rigorous that when they come to like Ivy Leagues in America, it's just like, okay, I'm taking a break, because this is not as hard as like Korean high school.
It's crazy. It's a crazy
Yeah.
one. It's most people don't really consider it. There's a tactical advantage. Just you having grown up in those places. It's different.
Yeah. So, what would you say you love about animation?
I just like the ability to create. There's something about that. I think it's innate in all human beings. In that I've never seen anybody who people have different things they enjoy creating, but everybody
Right.
likes creating, right? That's one thing I've noticed. Even I have my friends who like love money, and it's more like they like to see it build up. And that's what creation is, right? It's like something such someone you see it build up. It's that you see it kind of like actualize itself. I think that's the thing that's innate in everybody. I like to see this. So I just like creating, and it's different ways. So for example, when I'm coding for reading, or even just coding, just for trying to create something else, like in AR stuff. It's a creating bit of it that's interesting versus the numbers.
Yeah.
So just in general, animation and everything, I just like the creating. And then animation in terms of animation as a tool, it's almost, I think the apex would be if gaming would be the apex of hitting all the bringing all the art forms into one. Animation is so close in doing that, in that you have the design, you have this, you have music, like you hit all the different ways human beings can create into one space, and you have 100% control over it. That's what I like about it. It's just, I love, I'm a control freak, I guess. I can do that now. I just realized, but I like how much control you have in that reality you're creating.
So even though you're a rigger, what is the most challenging thing about rigging? Like, why do people like me quit trying to be a rigger? Like, what is challenging about rigging?
I don't think I'll classify myself as a rigger. I think almost like Da Vinci, right? Because Da Vinci, he's an artist, so he'd be like, I don't think I'd put myself as an artist. It's that kind of thing. I think because he inspired me, that's why I have that thing. So I'll talk about rigging first, and I'll talk about like production design and concept art, right? I'll balance it. So in terms of rigging, the challenging bit is even the way I draw, they're connected. Is there are people who go with how they feel things are, and there are people who go with pure technique when they're creating, right? So the technique informs the creation. At some point, just go with the flow, and then the creation appears, it shows itself, right? I'm more on the side of the technique coming to the creation. And because of that, when I'm rigging now, I can't manage to find the interest in those things. And I was always good at math, but it was just going to be physics and stuff. It definitely helped. So the numbers don't seem as scary, right? I'd imagine if you're horrible at math and then you see brackets and the different colors on the, you're like, bro, nah. But if you already have like that thing, you're not that scared of math, it helps. But if I feel like it's easier than most people think, but that could be because of the way my head works and the way I look at things, right? So I don't know how to describe it, because to me, I'm like, it's really easy. That's like, oh, Melissa should probably attest to this. I tried to teach her how to draw, and I am not a good, I cannot teach kids. I don't have the patience. So it's that kind of thing, because it seems too obvious. You're like, it's two circles with that distance. How can you not? Same thing as that, right? But now in the rigging stuff, it's like, it's literally add the semicolon there or bracket here. That's it. And somebody's not getting it, but to you, it seems very obvious. So I just think it's the way people, it's the way you think, the way your brain works. If your brain works more in the analytical way, where you like the numbers, you like the processes, like when you're drawing as well, you're measuring everything when you as you're drawing along the way, and you enjoy that. Picking up rigging will be much simpler for you, versus if you're more of like you're drawing the lines and the line feels good, and you draw the next line and it feels good, you're going there. But your rigging doesn't go with feelings, man. It's like you hit the number appears. There's no feelings there.
You're right.
It comes after.
And then you were
So
going to talk
I
about production design.
production design and art, same thing, kind of connected, right? It's more like it's like drawings. I know. Do you draw? Like, are you really good at drawing
Yeah,
yourself?
I don't draw as much, but I grew up
As much.
drawing.
Exactly. Have you ever tried to teach somebody who doesn't know how to draw how to draw?
I've taught more 3D stuff than drawing, but
3D stuff. 3D is a bit sim 3D is more forgiving.
yeah, because you don't
3D is
have
way
to,
more
like,
forgiving.
you
The
can just use
perspective.
cubes and cylinders.
Exactly. Right? So
Yeah.
3D is a lot more forgiving, right? But even in 3D, I can imagine, I'm sure when you're trying to teach somebody something and you see they're not getting it and you cannot fathom how they cannot be getting it, I don't
Because
know
you
if you've
have this like
experienced that.
artistic eye, and it's like you can teach artistic eye, but it's like, but how did I learn artistic eye to teach artistic eye?
That's what I was gonna say. That's exactly what I mean, is there's a way you should be able to see something in order to do it. And I don't know how to teach that, I'm gonna be honest. I tried, I thought I could. I told people everybody can draw. Now I had to backtrack. I had to walk that back quickly because nah. It's just how you are. I think you can
Yeah.
learn the ways you can learn it. I think the best way to learn will be the technical way. That's the way I normally do, because that's how I learn stuff. I think it works better in the long term. The only problem with that is the technical way, you lose it faster than the feelings way. That's really, because if I take a long time without drawing, I draw like a chicken. Like I have to like relearn everything almost. But the more feeling stuff, when the things I draw more on the feeling side, they always stay. Like I can always draw them. Like the
Yeah.
well, the first things I drew, right? Like let's say like drawing an eye or something like that. I can draw a good eye anytime. You can look at me from sleep when I'm 70 years old. I haven't drawn an eye in 50 years. I'll probably draw a good eye. But you tell me to draw, okay, draw a person from the back without a shirt so the muscles are right and all that. Can't do that after like if a year, maybe not a year, 3 months without drawing that, gone. Like I can't do anymore. I have to kind of refresh and then everything comes back again.
Yeah, with the way, like, okay, so I was always good at math and art as well, and so I went through wanting to be like an architect, industrial engineer, and then before I found animation, I was gonna become an electrical engineer. And like earlier this week, I actually one of my Facebook friends was like, "I'm helping my niece with my home with her homework," and then posted like an equation. I think it was from trigonometry, and like, and I'm like, what are you trying to like? Cause I went up to AP Calculus, but I still like I that was like 20 years ago. So I'm like, what are you trying to do with this? Because I don't remember, like, if you just post this on Facebook after 20 years, I don't know what you're trying to do. And he's like, oh, we're trying to factor a polynomial. So I was like, well, okay, I knew how to do that at some point. So I just like looked up a YouTube tutorial, and I'm like, oh, okay. And so I like broke down, like, earlier this week. I'm in animation, but earlier this week, I'm like, okay, so you got to do this. Because other people just like gave them an answer, but I'm like, if they're doing homework, she needs to know how to do other
The
problems.
process.
So let me break down the process of factoring a polynomial. And then, so I was like, oh, yay. Like, if I ever have children, I think I'll be good with helping them with their math homework, because I like could pop back into it. But for me, with having the analytical and creative, like, my thing was like, I like the building. So that's why I concentrated on being a 3D modeler, because it's just like, I can just build this thing. Like, because I used to do build things in, whether it was with Play-Doh, or like I would take like cardboard and tape and make dresser drawers or something like that. But it was like I can combine the art side of my brain and the technical side of my brain and like be a modeler. But you chose that and chose rigging, and I was like, well, that's a bit much for me. Rigging is like, ah, too much.
I
But
think look at it more like tool creation. If you look at it more like tool creation, I think you'll love it because it speeds up your modeling and it adds another dimension to your modeling that's a lot more fun. So for example, I build like different randomizers and stuff like that. I build things that to put in objects that I created like a long time ago. I don't know where the file paths are, but my code does. It pulls them in. Like screws. You don't know how to model a new screw every single time you do a screw, right? It's like all those little things I can put them in very easily. And it adds a dimension to it and it makes it. I find it very satisfactory when I made something like a year ago and then I'm using it today still. Every time I use it, I'm like, oh, I think. Try go to
I
like
think
tool
like
building for
learning
modeling.
Python has been like right here, but it just,
Mm-hmm.
I just try to concentrate on certain things, but like yeah, I get it.
Yeah, give it a shot. I have a feeling you'll like it. I have a
So
feeling. If I'm wrong, let me know.
when did you like start Kugali Media, and what do you all do?
Cool. So Kugali Media, original start, I would say the first start was just Tolu and Zeki. I would say that's when they were doing like the podcast. It was, can't say the word, Delve Otaku, something like that. I'm sure I butchered it. All right. There's a podcast, and that's how they collected the artists. I heard about them. At that time, I was just trying to find, I wasn't as serious, but I was trying to find a way to just tell stories from back home, right? But I wasn't as serious. And then I became serious in 2017 there. So around 2017, that's when it became Kugali, but we're not registered as a company yet. So officially it's 2018. But Kugali, as you know, it was born in 2017 and then officially 2018. And what we were doing at that time, I was in visual effects. Full on rigging at that time, like rigging was rigging and modeling. No, I did not draw most of that year. I can't remember. I think I did like only two drawings the whole year. So it was modeling and rigging and mostly rigging, right? So that's what. And then Tolu was in the gaming side. So I'll be more tech as well, but more on the gaming side. He lives in Lagos, still lives in Lagos. Ziki was working in finance before he went full time Kugali, which is that was the biggest thing. So our team had a really good balance, i.e., I came up from inside industry itself. So Luke came from the tech side in general. He liked gaming, but his dad is one of the people like into tech and apps and stuff like that. So he had that tech side, and then I was industry experience. I'd worked in very small teams, Electric Theater, which was like 50, 60 people in the studio, and then went MPC, which is fucking thousands all over the place, right? So I had experience in both, and I was always a very curious person in terms of learning, because it's always my goal of like starting my own thing. And then I was just like, what's the point of starting your own thing? Because that's one of the problems I saw about Africa in general and back home, is like all the people who are really good start their own studios, so all the people who are really good don't work together because they all have their own things. So I was like, okay, I don't want to follow that trend. So I was like, let me see who's doing something, which is what I want to be doing. And they're still small enough and early enough where I can join in as a founder. And then we come together. So that was Kugali. And then we came together, main mission, just again, improving African visual storytelling. The way I came in was very different from the way Ziki came in and Tolu came in. Ziki Tolu was more similar. They just wanted to showcase the best African stories. Like Ziki hates the story. Ziki doesn't like it being told as much. His young brother is biting him on that story. It's to do with his young brother. So if you meet Ziki, ask him about it. See if he'll tell you. But that's one of the motivations. It was more like there were a lot of cool African artists around the world, but they were not getting the daylight. So they're like, we're gonna try and give them the daylight. My own was from a different angle. Was I was working in at that time I just finished working on Lion King. I was working on Dumbo, I think, and I was like, I'm here working in the highest level of visual entertainment. But back home, there's an animation that came out called Malaika. I thought it looked cool, but I showed it to my colleagues at work, and they roasted it because they were like, look at the rig when he's walking. There's no cloth seam. It's like all like only the bottom bit is moving up. And like they nitpicked it, but it was all true. Right, but it's one thing if I didn't give them a context. It's almost like I get my lipstick drawing and I take it to like an art critic. I'm like, hey, look at this, you probably rip it apart, right? So that's what happened there. Then I was like, okay, if our best efforts, this is like what the result is, and I'm here working on this, let me try and see if I can pull up the quality to match the world quality. That's all my motivation to come into Kugali and start it with the other two fellows.
So how did you meet Tolu and Ziki?
I just reached out. I reached out to quite a lot of people. 2017, I told you, like, I don't believe I did that much work. It's one of those things I'm like, there's no way that was the same year. Like, if there was no documentation or messages, I would not have believed you it was the same year. Because I was still in uni. I graduated that year. That's the same year Kugali started. That's the same year I was in MPC as well. Same year I was in Electric Theatre. In Kugali, when I was there, I did a few things. I met up with I remember I would chain up meetings. So I'd have like 10 meetings in one day. I remember there's no Zoom then, that was physical. So I have the first meeting, and I'll read the meetings where, because let's say some people's meetings, you have to go to them. I'll get the furthest point, and then I'll map out like on the map. I'll make sure I have meetings going towards that place. And I get to them, then it's half the day I get to them. Then the meetings are coming back now. So by the time I'm the last meeting, I'm closer to home. I'll be like a bunch of those, right? And I'll do that over and over again. Remember, I'm still working full time as well. So I'm working, go to the meetings. Like I really don't know. I really don't know. I that year, I really wish I documented how much I worked. I'm pretty sure I hit some insane hours that year. So that was pretty much it. It was just I reached out to a bunch of people, and there were people who connected best with us because they had the opening, and then the team had a good balance in that this person was in finance, so I know they know how the world works. This person is in tech. Even if I can code to them, that's child's play. Like my coding is child's play to tell you probably, right? So it was that thing of like, yeah, that's a different kind of coding there. So it made a really good balanced team, and everybody had good intentions. It wasn't for the money, which was like really good. Nobody was running it for the money. So that was, it was just worked out. Again, that was luck because maybe I would never have met them and it would never have happened, but it was good luck meeting them and then made a really good team.
What will Kugali be providing to the world that's different?
I think it's just one, how we are set up right now. I don't think anybody is set up like us in terms of how we value strategy and how we go strategically, because we have grown really fast and because we move very strategically. So the growth in that, the way we have set up in terms of our employees before Zoom, like we were born online. I've never met Tolu in person, one of my co-founders. So with Tolu, I've never met Tolu in person, even if I've been working with him for a bunch of years, and I've not met a lot of the artists. Now, obviously, when I go to Uganda, I meet the ones who are in Uganda. When Justin went to Kenya, I met the artists who are in Kenya. Because we have artists all over the continent. I don't think many people can say they have artists all over the continent. That's one. And then two, we have managed to make noise, which is very hard to do today. There's too many people trying to make noise, so it's really hard to make noise. Right? We managed to make some noise, managed to get our name out there. We managed to produce like the project we just worked on. We delivered in 2 months. We delivered, our team is not that big. We delivered two animations, an augmented reality experience, create a whole brand book for them, a whole new logo for the campaign, and created, we attached the AR character inside like Zoom and stuff, so you can use them, you can talk as a character in Zoom and things like that. Like we did that in 2 months, a team of less than, say about just under 10 people in terms of creators. That's crazy. Both animations were like a minute long. Right, and that's because of just the way we set up. Like my whole first year in Kugali, the only thing I was doing was coding. Just coding up the whole pipeline, right? So we have the pipelines, which would be not at the level, but does function-wise, in terms of the huge studios, but we are small studios, so we have an extra advantage because we are agile and nimble, but we also have the tools to automate a lot of things. So I tried to automate as many things as I could. In the first year of Kugali, I was just coding, coding, coding. Like that was mainly what I was doing in Kugali, was just coding. That was crazy. So we have those advantages. So it's just, it's a perfect, there's nothing completely unique, but the way it comes together, it creates a whole new thing. That's the best way I can put it. Either the people have employees in Africa, but do they have employees in every single corner of Africa? Right? Two, the people who maybe who are just doing that right now. We have experience in this. People are just joining the Zoom world now. We've been on this Zoom slash right now in StreamYard, Hangouts, whatever. We've been on that world since our inception, as in since we were born there. Like, you know, the Batman line, you simply adopted the duck. We were born in the, that's literally us, right? So we have a lot of advantages coming to us. It's one of the things where if we mess it up, like we really would have to drop the ball to mess it up in terms of the ingredients we managed to put together.
Yeah, at the beginning of the pandemic, there was like these people on Twitter who are in the animation industry, and they were doing these like Zoom meetups. And one of the guys, he did the little avatar on Zoom, and I was like, theoretically, I definitely want to learn how to do that, but I've never practically. I'm like, dang it, I need to figure out how to do that because it would be cool to have like a little Muppet or something while I'm talking on Zoom. But I haven't tackled that yet. But it's a goal in life.
Not it.
'Cause he used his iPad and Blender, I think. So,
That's dope.
how did Iwaju come about?
Well, that's a funny story. Okay, so we did the first, we launched, we did our first, okay, we created the first ever African comic book anthology. So obviously that was the first ever, so it made some noise, right? We did it on Kickstarter. And our goal was to raise, I remember our goal was to raise £10,000 at the time, and then ended up raising about 27, I think, by the time the campaign
Nice.
ended, right? But obviously that made some noise, I got the presentation, and then the BBC wanted to do a piece on us based on that. So BBC was recording us, so the whole day of video recording, as you know, condensed down to 3 minutes. Now, during the interview, I can't remember the exact question, but the answer I gave was, we are going to kick this ass in Africa. Right? Now, when I said that, I was thinking, that's a bit brash. I did mean it, funny enough. A lot of people are like, did you mean it? Were you just busting? I was like, I actually meant it in terms of my whole point was, if they did not pick up on African stories,
Right.
the diversity of stories we have in Africa, and if you look at how generally right now cinema in the West and stuff, it was starting to get a bit stale, a bit repetitive,
Yes.
right? And then there's something really fresh this side. Okay, think about it. That's where civilization started from, was Africa.
Yes.
How can there not be amazing stories from there? All right. So we're like, if they don't pick it up and we stick to this, we're gonna kick the asses. Right? But I said it in a very like, you know, when you're in a flow, you're feeling yourself, but then that's why I said it. Now, I never thought I'm gonna put that in the interview. And then here the interview day come, they didn't give us like a pre-approval, they just put it up, right? We knew that because they're doing us a favor. They put it up and the heading is African comic company going to kick Disney's ass.
People to read it.
Exactly right. Then I'm like, oh wow, here we go, right? And then one of the creative execs from Disney reaches out to us on LinkedIn. At that time I was living with Ziki, my other co-founder. He was sitting like right on there on my right. I was sitting over here. He got the message first. He was like, yo, so I think someone from Disney messaged me, but it looks like a fake account. Like, I don't know if it's real. Like, you're not gonna believe it, right? Then I got the message. I was like, huh, I just got a message as well. Huh. Then we set up the dialogue, and then that thing of like, we just reached out just to talk to us to see what's up. Like, who are these people planning to kick our asses? Right? They reached out to us. They liked, they looked at our work. They've done some research on us. Of course, they've done research on us. And they liked what they saw, like on the website, they liked our comic books, they liked the stories, they liked how different the things were.
Yeah.
Just a meeting, it's just like perfect thing. They're like, oh, we want something different because they're doing something different. Then the approaches were like, okay, cool, let's see. From there, from that thing, we're like, how about we pitch you guys some stuff? We said, we got, like, nothing has to happen. And then pitch happened, and then Iwaju came along from that. I'm trying to be careful what I can mention, what I cannot
Yeah.
mention here, of course. And then, yeah, that's how it happened. It was more from that reach out, and then, yeah, Iwaju came up from that. Yeah, being super careful what I can say. You gotta leave it there.
So, I've read different things, but is the trailer coming out this year and then Iwaju comes out next year or?
Yes, Iwaju comes out next year. Trailer, maybe this year, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. We'll find out.
Yeah.
Yeah, Iwaju next year. Because in the first announcement, he did say this year, but we corrected that to next year.
Yes,
Because
yeah.
the when the movie comes out, we'll go through all this. Don't worry. But it's one of those things where it grew. That's the best way I can put it. It grew.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's coming out next year.
What have you learned throughout your life and career that will be beneficial advice to others?
If you want different results, you have to act differently from other people. That's one, because most people want to be, how comes they get to but they, I'm like, no, you're not them. Right? So it's that thing of like, you have to really look at what you want out of life. You don't care about other people. Like, other people have their own lives. You don't know the depth of their lives, right? You don't know what they're sacrificing, you don't know what they're gaining, for real. So look at that and then really plan out how you want your life to be. That's gonna change, obviously. As you grow, you're gonna get wiser, hopefully. If you don't get wiser, maybe that's it may be a blessing. Ignorance is bliss, right? So, but you get wiser, you realize you're wrong about some things, and you just keep on evolving. So I'd say just staying true to yourself and just making sure you work hard for what you want. Like, you cannot expect unique things and you're not unique from anybody else, or you're unique in a negative way, right? So that'll be one big lesson. And the other one is just really, I think really try and really know yourself. That'll be the biggest one. Yeah, I think really know yourself. I think that's coming from, I have a friend of mine, they went for their career. I'm not gonna expose them and stuff, like another field, right? And they're not really happy with that, but they're doing really well. So they can't really leave it. So it's like golden handcuff for them, right? So I would say, but if they knew themselves, like you know what really makes you happy, you as you. And then obviously you think about survival. It's not all about happiness. If the world was all about happiness, nobody would care about Ferraris or even our house or even our shoes. You didn't choose, right? So you have to think about that. I think just always consider the economics of it and your emotions as you plan for life, because both matter. Yeah.
I think when you mentioned that you don't know people's sacrifice or what they've gained, you also don't know what they've lost.
Oh
So,
yeah. Oh yeah.
all that
Definitely.
glitters is not gold.
Like a lot of people be like, "Oh, your life is so awesome." I'm like, there's some things about me I'm like, I wish I could change, right? But it's like, if I change them, I would not be me. Like I told you, I'm horrible with keeping in contact with people. But that also allows me to work really hard because I don't have any distractions. Nobody's messaging me at any random time and so on. But you tell somebody, for example, I've improved a lot now. But if at first you told people like, "Hey, me messaging somebody once a week was me talking to somebody a lot," they'd be like, "Oh, don't you feel lonely?" I'm like, "What's that?" It's like, what do you mean? But yeah, but it's a thing of like, again, growth you have to learn. But just because of that, I have very few friends, but I know those friends understand me. And I can't really, in terms of sacrifice, right? My end, I can't think of many people I can be like, "Oh, like that's my best friend and he's my best friend." I can't think of anybody who I have that with. I'm also kind of fathom that, but I'm fine with it. It's just how I am, right? But most people cannot do like that. Although I'm working on it, is nice to have like more deep connections with people. It's nice. I'm learning that. But yeah, it's something you work on. Again, balance, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and then on the piece on like knowing yourself, like I know I, you know, because I just moved out to California in a couple of years ago, and so I always thought in the back of my head, like when I graduated from college, like typically, you know, you go to school to study college, you like make these friends, and then y'all like move out to California together and be poor and together, and so like, but I didn't have that. Like all my friends were like not in it, in my in it. Like I had two friends that I met in my department, and one he like left stop motion to like become a paralegal. I don't know if that his parents made him do that, and then like the other guy, he like we had the animation film track, and he just went to film track. So I always thought about like, oh man, I missed my chance to get to California, but then I had to like, I ended up wanting to move from New Orleans. And I feel like it benefited me to move to California at a later time because even though in college I was not like a peer pressured person, I remember when people, when I was moving to California, you know, they're like warning me about like Hollywood and like selling your like
Getting lost in the sauce.
soul and all this stuff. And I'm like, I am like 10 years, like 15 years older than I would have if I had graduated from college, so I think I'm good. And I've like grown so much. Like at college was a time to like grow, and then I've grown so much since then. So I feel like I'm more grounded, and like this was a better time to move to California and not get kind of lost in the sauce. So
Yeah, that's very true. That is very, very true. Yeah, it's just, again, a lot of things. I often say that I feel like time travel is real, but maybe it's just a loop now. Because if you think about the number of things which you're like, "Oh, I missed that," but you're like, "Holy crap!" It was like there's a lot of moments where, like, if it's 1 minute this way, 1 minute that way, your whole life is different. Right, think about it, like that line, "Gonna kick the disease in Africa." If I did not say that line that way, probably Wagyu doesn't exist. Right? You think about it, how crazy is that? Right? It's just like the smallest of differences, right? So I'm like, maybe there's something there. Maybe there's another thing there. So the timing is weird. It's just, that's why I think I like wherever life goes, I was like, okay, this is just part of the journey now. Let's see how this turns out at the end.
Yeah, and I was just talking to my sister about there's this illustration I've seen where someone's like digging into like a wall, I think. I'm not really sure. I can't remember, but it's like maybe they're digging into the wall and they give up and there's like a golden
A
nugget
huge
of like
diamond
right
right next
like
to it.
so people so many people give up on their what they're doing like just before they were about to break and succeed. And so that just like sticking to something, and like if you have a goal, just keep moving toward that, and then it might not hit. Like I feel like for like millennials and younger, it's such a microwave society that you expect something to hit like
Quick.
immediately. But if you just keep going, it'll hit eventually. Because even if you think about it, like a Kevin Hart or some other people, like they became famous overnight, but no, they were working for like 15 years. They've been comedians or whatever for 15 years. So it's nothing's like an overnight success. It just looks like an overnight success to you.
Yeah, 100%. Because on that thing, because you spoke about it, and I don't know, do you ever read about that story of like, because I went broke, when I was, so when I was in MPC, I was saving money so I could go full time for Gali. And you always think you save more money. Like you always think you
Yes.
have enough money. No, right? And I was on rice and eggs for like almost a whole month, because that's all I could afford. That's how broke I was. And I got a job offer. It was a company in Germany, and they were going to pay me 70,000 euros. So I'm on rice and eggs. The offer for 70,000 euros a year comes through. Locked in 2 year contract, guaranteed. And I rejected it because in my head I was like, integrity was, like, I left MPC because MPC has decent money. It's not amazing, but it's decent money. It's like I left MPC with the goal of helping African storytelling. What would it say about me if the first opportunity comes up for me to like abandon it and I jump off it? But I can't think of many people who would stick to it at that point. Because if you think about, because right now thinking back at it makes a good story, isn't it? Like I was on rice and eggs, it makes a good story. But when you're inside it's like it's a way, like when you cook it, right? Because sometimes I boil the eggs just have the rice, sometimes I boil it, sometimes I scramble it, sometimes I fry it. There's a difference, particularly when I had it boiled and I'll put ketchup on it. And when I was putting the ketchup, I was just so sad. I was like, really? This is my life right now. And then I remember that I put myself in that position. Like I was having free fruits in the studio. Right? So it's that thing of like there's always that point where I think there's a value to sacrifice. I think a lot of things, like I feel like having life as a creative is more of a privilege than it is like a right. Right? Because if you think about it, that's something innate human beings and you get to do it as your life. I think it's not something that I'm supposed to. I think it's something you earn and then you keep on paying your dues to be able to be a person who does that. That's how I look at it. I don't look at it like, oh, we're all supposed to be creators. That's why, because a lot of, I think you've seen this, a lot of people you went to school with and stuff like that are not even in that creative field anymore. It's, I always look at it as a privilege because of that. It's just like, I don't think anybody deserves it. I don't think anybody's made for it. It's just something you pay your dues for it and then you stay there. Yeah, I always look at it as a privilege. Like, if it disappeared right now, I'd be like, I had my time in the sun, enjoyed it. Let's see what we're gonna do now. But it's always a privilege, yeah.
So you seem to be good at like staying on the pulse of trends in animation, such as tapping into augmented reality, and you also seem to be multidisciplinary in how you express your art. So like, what are the benefits of like the beginning of time, like drawing, and then like, but also being willing to dive in and learn the newest technologies?
Also, because if you think about any big invention or the next big thing, it's never like one person created it. Even electricity, it's just a bunch of people had different ideas. The zeitgeist in the area, right? People who are looking at the future always look at these different things, and then everybody contributes a little thing, and then one person gets all those things together and creates something new. That's how it comes about. It's never like nobody created a phone from scratch. Like there was this tech thing created, there was a battery created, there was that created. And you never really get to see the breadth of that if you're not looking at the new technologies coming up. So I like reading scientific papers, which is really weird for an artist, right? I'll sit down and read what that come out just to see what's new, what's happening there, what's possible in the future, right? And then that's the future thing, but that's just knowledge. And then wisdom is learning from the past. So that's the drawing stuff, the basics, and so on. If you don't have the basics, you cannot create something new. Like everything you're gonna create is gonna fall apart. It has no foundation. The basics, the wisdom is the foundation for it. And then the knowledge is what helps you create something new. So that's why I always keep that balance. And I think that's something I learned from Da Vinci as well. In that it's if you have two things, if you have two opposing ways of looking at life, it gives you more answers for every question you have. So let's say if you have a question like, oh, what does this mean? And then if you look at it as an artist, it means very different from when you look at it as a scientist, from when you look at it as a like a woman, right? If you look at it as a black person, it all gives you different answers. I like to consider all of that because the truth is often like all those angles see part of the truth, and then the truth is a combination of all of those, as many of those as possible. So that's why I like to always keep that diversity in my skills and also in the things I see. Because I want to be like an art. Right now, the way I describe myself is an artist with an interest in creative leadership. That's very important to me. So creative leadership, and again, as an artist, so I want to cover that as broadly and as best as I possibly can.
Speaking of creative leadership, do you have any desires to get more Ugandans and other Africans interested in 3D?
Oh yeah, that's a big goal for Kigali, especially this year. I just came from Uganda a couple of weeks ago. That's why my cheeks look so healthy right now. I just came from Uganda like a week and a half ago now, about, right? I was in Uganda and I put out a call. I visited a number of art schools. There are a few that popped up now, which are very interesting. I visited a few studios and I went to a few. I had a media tour with a few places, as you can imagine. And I put out a call for everybody in Uganda who is a creative to reach out to me. And I found a lot more people than I thought I would find. And I also found like the quality has gone up and the quality is improving exponentially. Like every year I go back, the quality is higher and the numbers are higher. And that's really exciting for me. So that's definitely something like, because nobody can tell your story better than you. There's little nuances, right, that always come in there, right? And if right now the African industry is not robust enough to be able to tell its own story from beginning to end and compete with the world market, like people have done it by, like, if you told somebody you mentioned animations from Africa, most people will mention maybe Kirikou, right? That's one most people will mention. That's not, but if you think about it, then you mentioned animations from this place, like let's say the usual dominating culture right now would be like the US, right? It's quite a few. You got Japan, quite a few that are dominating culture in terms of animation field. And because they have the dominating culture, they can dictate how the stories are told and the nuances of their own stories. Now, there's some things which you watch in Japanese anime that if they happen in a Disney movie, you'd be like, whoa, what the hell? Who greenlit that? Like, we need that for Africa because that's where the pure authenticity is. And we need enough people in the field. We need enough people in different areas of leadership. That's why I think that, 'cause that's one thing that I thought was lacking. That's why I went in that direction, is there was a bit of like the creative leadership was a bit lacking. There's a few, but there's not enough. So we need all the areas of creative leadership filled up. And then we need all the people coming in as just junior artists, senior artists, every single level filled up. So we can come up and even, not even that, even the finance and business side, we need to get like, raise their own money to create like a purely thing. That way, you tell the story, nobody in that chain can go, that's a bit weird when it's not weird. You get it? So, if, for example, Japanese anime was not that big, or Japanese film was not that big, if any other studio was trying to make a Japanese one, I'm pretty sure there are a few things that'd be like, nah, that's weird, let's not do that. Like, why is a dragon? It has such a long body. How is it moving? The science of it doesn't make sense. Nobody can argue that, right? Like in Shang-Chi, right? When you watched it and you saw the dragon in that world, the only reason that dragon makes sense how it looks right there is because you've seen it all over and over again throughout Chinese films, Chinese like art in general. That's why we accept this snake that can move the way it moves. It shouldn't be able to do that, right? We try and make it look cool, right? It looks cool to us now. So we need to get that level with all the art and all that pretty much visual entertainment and just art from Africa. We need to get things to the level where people are like, it's a weird thing, but that's just how that thing is.
Speaking of like raising money, you had another Kickstarter that you did before the one that was successful. So what did you learn from the failures? Like, what did y'all do wrong in the previous Kickstarter that you learned to do right in the other Kickstarter?
Yeah, we've had a very interesting Kickstarter journey. We had a win, think a win, then an L, then a win, and another. I think I've done three or four, I can't remember. I think I've done maybe four or three. I'm not sure. I'm trying to remember. Let me see. So we had the anthology, we had the failed one, Moringa, Nani, four. Maybe the fourth one is on the way now. Again, that's I'm more in the creative services side, i.e. AR and stuff. I focus on publishing is more to lose in terms of the Kickstarter and stuff. But I think it's four. If it's not four, the fourth one is coming out like in a month or something. But what we learned was from the failed one was there's a big difference between people being excited about something and people paying for something. I thought they were the same thing because excitement was real. Yeah, the excitement was real on that second one, right? Well, like, and because of that, I think we didn't market it as hard as we could because we saw the excitement there. So that was one big thing. Second one was more due diligence, which we're just doing now. We don't leave anything to like, oh, it's me. No. We are going deep in every single thing. We prepare for everything from the beginning and so on. So it's a good lesson in carrying out your due diligence in terms of Pretty much crossing your D's and dotting your I's in every single step of the Kickstarter, no matter what it is. So that's another thing we learned. Just pull that up. And then I think that'll be the two main ones. The biggest one was just excitement is not the same as we're gonna pay for it. It doesn't matter how excited people are. Sometimes I'll be like, oh, it's really dope, really dope. And they will be genuinely excited, I'll be mind blown even. Like, I don't think anybody's been mind blown by a comic book I've made, but the AR when we're moving around in the when we did like in comic conservation stuff like that. Like the actual people when their brains are on the floor seeing the AR. Right? And you would think in terms of emotional impact, you'd think that would carry more, but no, not really. That's just an experience people that enjoy. That is more like a good experience for them versus something they would pay for. So that's one of the biggest lessons we learned there was excitement not doesn't equal to people gonna shell out the money.
Yeah, I know that's the like there was this model on Instagram who had like 1 million followers and she came up with a t-shirt line and didn't sell one t-shirt. So it's like even your followers don't equate to
Wow.
like and then juxtapose that with like there's a guy in America who I like study whose name is like Kev on Stage and I'm part of his Patreon and his supporters went from being called the 95 to the stage crew, but just being in that environment and knowing the behind the scenes, like people literally want him to create stuff so they can give him money. Like it's so amazing. Like I'm a fan of him, but I'm also like studying like how do you create fans like that where they're like, can you create this t-shirt so I can give you money? Or like that him and his wife just came out with a they're pre-selling a marriage book and they have like the publisher was like, oh, if you get 1,000 by September, which is when the book comes out, then they'll be good. Their goal was to hit 5,000 because the Patreon and like or his wife has this book club on Facebook. They hit 1,000 before they even released it to the public. So just like creating that type of I'm just like, I need to study Kev on Stage.
I feel you. I feel you.
But also to go back to what you were saying about the nuance of Africans creating African stories, I definitely have my own personal views on like non-African people tackling stories, even Black Americans, which I don't have enough time to fully to say, and this is your interview. But like how do you feel about like non-Africans trying to tell African stories?
I think there's a place for it. I think it's important. As I said, the truth is from as many perspectives as possible. So, for example, there are some things which I look at as I'm like, yo, that's dope, that's glorious. Somebody from me will be like, no way, nah, no. People shouldn't live like that. Both stories are important, right? Both of those are important. So, I think there's a space for it. It only becomes a problem if that's a dominating one. I don't know which one is the right one. Because let's give an example, right? So there's a guy from the US, worked with us for a little bit. No black, no African, white guy, but he knows so much about African history. Knows more about African history than every single African I have met in my life. Right? So there's him. Why would, if he's to make a story from that point of view, and then somebody who lived in a certain place makes a story about that place, whose story is the correct one? You get it? Like, I don't have the answer for that. My answer is both. So we go with both. So I don't really matter who makes it, as long as where they're making it from is what matters to me. Like, is this, are you considering things, right? Like, if you're approaching it from a factual perspective, how many angles are you considering? If you're approaching it from just an emotional story, I really don't care. You can do whatever you want. That is, whatever, right? But if you're trying to be like, if there's a lesson in that thing, that's where it gets very, I'm like, you need to really consider different things because different cultures see things very differently. Yeah. So it's just, as long as you have the consideration, I'm okay with it. Yeah. Otherwise, I think everybody should join in. Nobody complains when somebody makes a chamois story. The African chamois is now all of a sudden. I'd rather that. I'd rather us have like a tribe, let's say, like let me say, like a Mugisu from a Japanese Mugisu. That would be awesome for me. So I don't want us to only tie ourselves down in there.
I think I will say, like, from my, because you know I have like outside of animation, I have extensive like social justice, civil rights background, and so part of my not liking it is that I feel like sometimes when even black people in America try to tackle things, it's similar to us colonizing your stores. And so, like, it's like sometimes when some people are talking about their stories, it's like, oh, we're gonna this, and it's like, did you do any research to like what the actual thing is? Like, do you have that care? And not everybody finds caring important. I just do. And so being like, oh, we're just gonna do this kente cloth and we're just gonna do that, and it's like, but what does the kente cloth mean to the people who have kente cloth? And like, so not everybody cares that much, but I do. So it's just like,
I get you.
I don't want to be like white people in that I'm just not thinking about the importance of things. And then there's also my personal feelings of black Americans not realizing that our culture that we had to create ourselves because of our situation is important as well. It's a viable culture and it
Oh, yeah.
affects the world. But we don't think that. We only think of our culture as being African culture, which that is important too, but black American culture is viable as well. So that's like the Cliff Notes version of my thoughts.
We need to create like a clubhouse room or something and then talk about this in depth. I like talking about this because it's something I don't know the answer to.
Right.
So I like to learn as much as possible because, for example, in your situation with the kitenge cloth, we have kitenge, we have kinte, right? I was like, kitenge, because I said you're gonna know and I know more about it. Like, there's a difference between the meaning in the past and what it means now. So I'll give you an example. Actually, I'll use one which is very prevalent in today's world, right?
Okay.
If somebody came to you and they were like, hey, I'm a feminist. There's an idea you have of who they are, right? And most people in the US will have that exact same idea you have of who they are. You rewind that 100 years ago, and somebody came to you and they're a feminist. That's a completely different person than the person you see today. Now, if you were to do research on about feminism, is it the idea from when it was born or the idea of what it grew into? Like, the part of the kitenge cloth, is it what it was or is it what it is to most people right now? Because, okay, let's say if the whole world is wrong about an idea, which is just a made-up idea, like of something, like just a constructed idea, right? Not a fundamental, like, for example, the skin has melanin inside it, that's more fundamental than this color is, like, than I'm a black man, right? Like, another culture could call me, I don't know, a red man or brown, whatever, right? But if you go scientifically inside that thing that makes the skin, that is that, right? Like that constructed thing there. Like, I don't know which one you pick and I don't know how you equate it because, one, you cannot have a good conversation without establishing what people actually mean. Right? That's the first one. So it's one of the things I really don't know how to answer it. It's just.
Because a very simple version of that is the word dating. Like, some people think it's like talking, and some people think it's
Exactly.
actually in a relationship. So you have to establish what is the definition, and then let's talk.
Exactly. Perfectly put. Perfectly put. So it's that thing. And then you ask people, like, is this definition correct? Is that definition correct? Like, you get a whole argument for that, and I don't think we can resolve it because I think someone was explaining it in a really interesting way. There was a talk I was listening to. I was about to doze off, unfortunately, when I was hearing this. But they explained it in that it's a thing where, in today's society, especially in the West, just Western society in general, words have not just meanings assigned to it, but feelings assigned to it. So, because of that, feelings change all the time, really time, right? So, a word with a feeling attached to it is always changing. And language is not supposed to be like that. Yeah, so it's something along those lines. It was very interesting, and I'll find it. But I know it was one of the Harvard professors. Can't
Yeah.
remember. But it was
It
one of
does sound
those I was about to
interesting.
doze off. It was very interesting, yeah.
What do you feel Africans can give to the world right now?
One unique perspective At two, I think we have a really, really good opportunity to learn from the mistakes of everybody else and do things much better and much differently, right? I feel like, I don't know how else to put this, but I'm looking at culture-wise in the West, and because again, we got very, what's the word, liberal with the views in the West, right? And is there a cutoff point in that? There's somewhere like there's a point in the West where it was very conservative, and we found the cutoff point for that. And right now, there's a lot of things where like the fighting is so real because we are fighting about fun. Like there's no common sense anymore, right? Because common sense is bought from like the idea of we both have a common understanding of things. That doesn't exist. So literally, there's no common sense anymore. And in Africa, we haven't got to that point yet. So I'd rather us not get to that point. Like I'd rather us figure that out. Unfortunately for you guys, one of those like we're gonna learn from you guys falling down. We're gonna be like, don't step on that,
Feel free.
right? Yeah, there's a few things I'm like, there's at least of recent, a few things I've seen and it boggled my mind so much. Like you're like, really? Like really that happened? Like that actually happened? It's crazy. It's just insane.
Depending on the group of people in America or in the West, we probably have boggled minds too.
So that's the funny thing. Like all sides are boggled from the other side. It's like these guys are like, really, you guys let that happen? These guys are like, really, you guys let that happen? I'm like, yo, you both let those things happen.
At a very basic level, I just like look at like some of like the Scandinavian countries or something, and I'd be like, dang, they just be like fixing stuff with their country, like they just don't let stuff just linger. They just be like, oh, this is bad, let's fix it.
You know the crazy thing is we have data from them in the West, but we are so tied down in the idea of how things should be, we don't follow that data. Like somebody has done it, it's working, right? We're like, no, it should be this way. I'm like, bruh, they did it already. They're like, yeah, but we're doing it, but it's gonna be different. Why? Because we are the ones doing it. I'm like, I don't think so. So it's one of those. I'm like, I really hope we don't fall into some of those pitfalls. But it's
Right.
the last couple of years have been very mind-boggling and very eye-opening.
What do you hope Ugandan and other African animation people are doing in this current landscape of access to free programs, YouTube, and more?
The first thing is not as many people have that access as you think, and number two is people don't understand the power of, because the ability to search right now is more important than the ability to remember things. Like knowing how to find knowledge is more important than recalling knowledge fast. Like if you can know it, if you can find knowledge faster, you have a way bigger pool than somebody who can remember knowledge faster, right? So there's that thing. That's one of the main things I preach to the students when I went to see them in Uganda. And the other one is a lot of Africa still doesn't have internet, and it's predicted in like the next 10 years there'll be like an extra like half a million or a billion people somewhere on the internet. It's crazy, right? It's a huge number from Africa, right? So that's all of a sudden like a whole new demographic, a whole new group of people coming in. Let's see how it plays out. I don't have an answer for that. Let's see how it plays out. But I think from that it's gonna really, because remember labor in Africa is cheap. I feel like Africa is gonna become the new China, the special country in terms of cheap labor and so on. I guess, but in a digital economy, I hope again we learn from China and we don't fall through the same pitfalls they went through. But yeah, that's the way it's looking like right now. It's gonna sound bad, but it looks more and more. It's looking more like the world superpower is gonna switch from U.S. to China, right? On that, and then Africa is gonna be the new China, kind of like in the way of creating cheap labor, cheap products, and so on. That's the way it's looking like right now. According to the numbers, that's how it feels like. I don't know when, maybe we can delay it, maybe it will not happen, but that's the way things look like right now.
I remember because you were talking about Python earlier, like I did take I took a Ruby on Rails class. Ruby on Rails is obviously doesn't exist anymore, but I remember I took that 8 week class and I was kind of worried. Like the first 4 weeks, I was worried, like, am I actually learning any of this coding stuff? But then the second 4 weeks, I got more comfortable because of what you just said. Like, I wasn't trying to like learn everything. I just needed to learn enough that I can go on what is the Stack Overflow or something and look up the answer. Like I just need enough to know how to look up the answer, and that's like the power in my mind. Like, so that troubleshooting is also important because you don't need to know everything, but you can figure out how to do anything.
I feel you.
What was your journey for from gaining weight to getting back in shape, and how did you do that? Like, what was the process for that?
But going through that again right now. This time is not as bad as last time. But that one was, I moved. Okay, I'm very solution oriented. So problem, I'm like, what's the easiest solution according to the how I am right now? So it's not the best solution is not the best solution. The solution that works is the best solution. That's a line I live by. So right now, because I'll tell you about right now what I'm doing right now, then I'll tell you what I did then, right? Right now, because of how busy I am, I bought a new treadmill over recently. If you have my Instagram, you'd have seen it. I just bought another treadmill, or a walking, another tiny walking treadmill. I'm putting that in the living room slash kitchen. So when I'm cooking, I'll be on the treadmill, and when I'm in the living, I'll be on the treadmill. When I watch movies, I'm in VR on the treadmill in the gym. That's the only time I watch movies now. I best put that aside, right? Like, unless I'm rested, then I'm watching normally, like a normal human being. But that's because that's the easy way to burn off the calories as I'm doing that. But before that, I didn't have the option. I was a bit more broke. So, right, I would take most of my meetings walking. So, because I have a ton of meetings, as you know, set up in an executive role, a ton of meetings. That's how networking and just strategic meetings and so on, right? And also employees from all over the world. It's only on Zoom. So I would just take the meeting, I'd put on the headphones, I'd be in the park, I'd walk. Like, I'll just walk for hours in the meeting. So it'd be like, I was averaging, the time I hit about 30,000 steps, like days in a row. And then one of those is a 40,000 steps. That's a ton of steps. That was just like meetings, and I'll take all of them walking. Like right now, if it's a necessary meeting I need to draw, I'm on a treadmill of some kind, or I'm walking outside. Yeah, so that's the easiest way I can summarize that. And then the diet was a huge bit. You got to work a bad diet. I managed to get my diet back on point. That's the time I had my blood like absolutely on point for a while. So that'll be the two things. But the easiest one would be like, if you just add in, if you have a lot of meetings, add like a walking treadmill. Take those meetings while walking. You don't have to walk quick. You don't have to like really kill yourself. But take those meetings while walking, it works really, really well. Especially because animators and stuff, we sit down all day. Like if you don't walk, when I'm having a lazy day, I don't walk, my steps are usually in like 1,200. That's ridiculously low, right? For a human being, you're not supposed to be taking 1,200 steps. So just find ways to walk around and stuff like that as you're walking. Like just find a way to integrate it into your actual life, day-to-day life.
And
Yeah.
last question, if someone was producing a documentary about you, what things would you want them to highlight about your life outside of your work in animation?
I saw my work in animation. Da -da -da -da. My PB's in the That'll be one. Guess my growth as a person in general. I have changed a lot, and I'm still changing a lot. Like, I have a goal by next year, I'm only going to be wearing suits when I'm outside the house. All right, it's a big change. The first big change was I
I
used to
did
be
that
the
in
guy in the hoodies
college.
and stuff.
I stopped
Yeah.
wearing sweats. I did like a whole clothing, like, I'm going to start wearing skirts now. I'm going to start wearing colors because I used to wear like earth tones.
I did that as well when I left uni. I was like, I'm only time when I wear a hoodie outside the house is somewhere to the gym or I'm running. And I've stuck to that. I wore quads. Now I'm going to full on suit when I'm outside. A lot more professional. So there's that. So in terms, that's just in terms of like the growth and generally how I've changed as a person. Like I went through like in uni second year, I partied so much. I wish I knew that energy would not be there when I was older. I would have used it for something more productive. Cause oh my, like cause I don't drink, so I would go out like 4 or 5 nights a week, and I'd make it to every single class and people. I was a good student. You know how much energy you have to do that. But right now it's not the same. So I really wish that. So it's just in terms of just general growth. I read a lot. I try to not even talk about the thinking. I do take time just to think. Like I actually do that. I'm like, okay, This is just an hour I'm thinking about this topic. That's it. I'm just taking tech notes. I take time being like, so that allows you to grow quite a lot. So just generally, I would say just to highlight how much I've grown from where I came
Yeah.
from to where I am right now, it's insane. Yeah.
Nice. So is there anything you want to promote, or where can people follow you on social media?
Cool. I would say first things first with Kugali. Just follow us everywhere, Kugali Media. We're a lot more easier to find now, thank God. At first, this was a whole task. So Kugali Media. And then if you want to see our Snapchat stuff a little bit more earlier, like with the AR stuff, it's called Kugali.ar. And now, I think now you can change the name. That may change to Kugali Media very soon. Yeah, but the name is still, you have the halted name. So, but the subject is easier to find. We have a gold star. We are like a Snapchat guy. So we have the gold star there. And then personal is Hamid Ibrahim Portfolio. So like a portfolio of work, then my first two names. So Hamid Ibrahim, then portfolio. That's how you can find us. Promoting things. We have a Kickstarter coming out pretty soon. So keep an eye on the Instagram, keep an eye on our socials. You'll see when it's out. Really excited about this one. It's definitely gonna be one that's it's an awesome story. I love it in terms of the whole story. So there's that. Obviously, Iwaju is gonna come on next year, so don't worry about it yet. I know I'm sure you'll hear about it when it's coming out, kind of thing.
Right.
There's no way you're gonna miss it. Yeah, Kickstarter, you may miss it, imagine you're not gonna miss it. So, yeah,
And
that's
I
it.
just want to thank you a lot for coming on my platform and allowing me to highlight you.
Thank you very much for having me.
But to everyone out there, I want you to like so I know it's real. Comment, tell me how you feel. Subscribe to Citadel and sign up for post notifications to show your zeal. And I'll see you in the next video. Peace.
All right.